Okay, welcome back, everybody. Three ideas in 30 minutes. We missed some of you on Shavuos night at 1:45 in the morning, but those who came, the diehards, showed up 1:45 to 2:15. But welcome back to our Thursday night edition, not just with hot dogs, but extra, it looks like extra dirty fries, emphasis on the dirty. So anyone enjoy some brisket tonight? Wow, we went all out. Okay, here we go, Parshas Naso. First of all, I want to thank our two sponsors for tonight. First, by our dear friends, Ben and Dina Isaacs from the 11559. Anyone who knows Ben knows he's a very dear friend, both a Rabbi Goldberg, myself, a BRS, and we're very, very appreciative of their sponsorship. And by our other good friends, Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, in gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS, we do not take for granted the Fedak sponsorship, and we are very grateful for it and for their continued support. Okay, here we go. Idea number one comes from a tshuva of Rav Ovadia Yosef. This tshuva is fascinating both because of the question and because of the answer. And here we go. Nishalti odos isha. Rav Ovadia was asked about a woman that when she was younger, she lived a certain lifestyle that was not a religious lifestyle. She was not yet religious. She met a man and she became pregnant. And after she became pregnant, she went to a doctor, and the doctor did an abortion. Okay, this is not anything revolutionary in America nowadays. But here's the wrinkle in her question. The achar kach avar misham le'ir acheres. Then she went to Israel for the year. V'chazra b'tshuva shlema b'shmiras Torah mitzvos. And then she becomes religious. V'niseis l'bachar yeshiva achared l'dvar Hashem. And she meets a guy, and he's a really frum Haredi boy. And they live, v'chayu yachta be'ava ve'achva shalom v'reyos. They are living the most beautiful, peaceful, harmonious, religious life in Eretz Yisrael. And he's Abram Imenu, v'yalda lo ben zachar. And then Baruch Hashem, this woman, who's now religious, and her husband, they have a son. And here's where the problem comes in. Because what happens after 30 days of a firstborn son? Is we have a mitzvah, pidyon ha-ben. They have to redeem the firstborn child. And so what happens is this father, who thinks that this is the firstborn child, because the mother never disclosed to the father her previous pre-religious lifestyle, so he's all getting all excited. He's planning the Pidyon HaBen. And he doesn't know, again, about her previous pregnancy, which would prevent them from having to do a Pidyon HaBen. Vayisha Baal Arav HaMekomi, so the woman comes to her rabbi, and she tells the whole story. She wants to know if she has to tell her husband, if they do the Pidyon HaBen, then he's going to say a bracha levatala. How can she willingly put him in a situation where he's going to say a bracha, a blessing that was unneeded and unnecessary, which is obviously not something that we encourage. Limros, but on the other hand, Shim yodea yo lo kol koros leishto kodim nisuav yufir shalom abayis. On the other hand, if she tells him everything about her past, it's going to ruin their shalom bayis. V'ala davar karov levadai. It's almost certainly shetifrots beinei meriva v'ktata. It's almost certainly going to cause fighting I'm looking for another adjective. It's going to be fighting. Divisiveness, fireworks. It's not going to be good for Shalom Bayis. A little tense in the house. And so she asks Rav Ovadia, what is the Psak Halacha? Wow, those are the questions where I am happy that I am a lowly rabbi here in Boca Raton and not a posek hador like Rav Ovadia Yosef. Let's just review the question. Question is, this woman had a previous pregnancy. Now she's religious and she has a baby. The husband is very excited because he gets to do a pidyon haben, and she has a halachic dilemma. On the one hand, she doesn't want to tell her husband because it's going to create so much fighting and such a divide between the two of them. On the other hand, if she doesn't tell the husband, then the husband's going to do a pidyon haben, and he's going to get up there and he's going to make a bracha, and the bracha is going to be a bracha levatal. It's going to be unnecessary bracha, and she's going to have on her shoulders that her husband made the inappropriate bracha because of her. So what do you say, Rav Ovadia Yosef? That was the question. That was the question. That does not come up. No, because then it wouldn't be a pidyon haben.
I know.
Right. So the presumption is that this would be a situation of pidyon haben. Rav Ovadia Yosef has a lengthy tshuva. But But I want to share with you just a few lines of his answer. Now, the reason why this is so amazing, A, it's going to tie into our parsha. But I want every one of you to see that what goes into a psak halacha is not just the halacha, but the sensitivity behind the halacha. In other words, when a posek, and I differentiate between a posek and other people, when a real posek, not just someone who, you know, went to smicha, I mean, a real posek, and I can speak personally, I've seen my Rebbe personally, Rabbi Neuberger, countless situations where I've seen this in action. But when a real posek is approached with a shaila of this level of sensitivity, they are very aware of all elements of it. Now, obviously, they have to maintain a fidelity to halacha, but they're very aware of the psychological impact of whatever psak halacha they are going to give. And I want you to get a sense, not just for the psak, but the greatness of our poskim, of how sensitive they were and how their uncanny ability to blend that sensitivity with psak halacha. Listen to what Rav Avadia writes. He writes, Hilkach, again, this after a very lengthy tshuva. Yanichu la'avi aben la'asosa pidyon im shtei habrachos. Rav Avadia says that you can allow the father to do the pidyon aben, and you can allow them to make two brachas, even though they're levatala, even though they were not necessary. Why? Shegadol kavod abrios, shedoche lo saseh shebetorah. Because we have a principle that kavod abrios, the way that we treat people, is more important than a lo saseh in the Torah. Okay, and he quotes the Gemara. Sheish lismos ve'al rush, shebeshogeg, ein sarach leodia. Okay, fine. V'kol shekein benido dindan. De'avis and derabanan lebilvad. Here, we're only talking about a derabana. Now, obviously, I don't use the word only lightly. One of the first things that a posek does when you get a shaila is you have to figure out, are we dealing with a deraisa, a biblical, or are we dealing with a derabana, something that's rabbinic? If it's deraisa, if it's biblical, you have a little less leeway. There's certain stricter criteria, I would say. When you're dealing with a derabana, it gives you a little more leeway as a posek to be able to incorporate other elements into that psak halacha. Why? Hold on. He says, "V'kolshkim yinon derave yisur derabanan bovad." The bracha levatal is only in yisur derabanan. V'hare im yiglu akol la'av yitzmach mizeh bizayon ubegam kado. He says, if you tell the father what the situation was, it's going to create a bizayon. It's going to embarrass everyone, and it's going to be a dark cloud that's going to hover over their household. Now, where I have my underline. He says, we have a situation in our parsha. And the situation in our parsha is the Isha Sota, a woman who was accused of inappropriate relationship. She was in Yichud, she was in seclusion with a man. She was warned by her husband. She did it again anyways. And so there was a presumption. There was an assumption. And so, of course, we know the story. She comes to the Beis HaMikdash, and in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a test that was done. And part of the test was that they took the Shem Hashem, and they put it in the waters, and it erased the Shem Shamayim. It erased the name of Hashem. And that was one of the ways that we ensured, or that we testified to the woman's innocence. And of course, if the woman was innocent, even after the accusal, she received great bracha. Says the Rav Avadia, if Hashem was willing to allow his name to be erased and desecrated, for the sole purpose of creating peace between a husband and a wife. Again, here the husband is making assumptions about his wife. And so therefore there's a lack of shalom bayis, there's a lack of peace in the house, all because the husband accuses the wife of something. The only thing that's going to allow the husband to come back to his wife is if Hashem himself essentially testifies that your wife didn't do what you think she did. And so Hashem is willing to allow his name to be desecrated, to be erased, simply to create shalom, to create peace between a husband and wife. Ela yanichu asav shu anus bedavar lasos opinion mebrachos v'yichem ishto b'shalom uvemisher v'heshkid uvetach. He says, if Hashem was willing to go through such extremes to keep peace between a husband and wife, then certainly in our case, we should allow the husband to make two bracha levatalas, two unnecessary brachas, for the sole purpose of maintaining peace between the husband and wife. That is the Pesach Halacha, based on our Parsha this week. And so I share that with you. It is such an extraordinary question, and it is such an extraordinary answer. And I share it with you, both because I think it's fascinating, but also because I hope you appreciate not just how Rav Avadia uses the case in our Parsha of the Isha Sota, but the sensitivity that Rav Avadia employs in his Psak Halacha. Rav Avadia did not just approach this as a strict, callous, cold, halachic decision. Of course, it has to be rooted in halacha. Rav Avadia was acutely aware of how it impacts other people. And the end goal of the Psak is equally amazing, which is the premise that if Hashem himself was willing to desecrate himself, if Hashem himself was willing to have his name erased for the sole purpose of creating peace between a husband and wife, then think about all of us. And I'll expand it to peace between anyone. I don't think it's limited to husband and wife. I've said this a million times, I'll say it a million and one. The last Mishnah in all of Shas, when Chazal chose to complete the entire Shisha Sidri Mishnah, the entire six books of the Mishnah, Chazal purposefully ended it with a line, and that is, Lo Matzah Kadosh Baruch Hu Kli Machzik Bracha Ela Shalom, that you could have all the blessing in the world, you could have all the money in the fanciest cars, in the nicest house, in the biggest vacations, but if you don't have Shalom, if you don't have peace, if you're always in fights with people, if you're always arguing with people, if you're always creating tension, then you have nothing, says the Mishnah. And that's how Chazal, that was their last message in all of Mishnah. All of the Tanaim was that nothing supersedes the value of peace. And we see it employed in this situation by Rav Avadia Yosef in extraordinary tshuva based on our parsha this week. Idea number two comes from Birchas Kohanim. And of course we know, it's just Shavuos, Sfardim, any Sfardim here? Sfardim are happier, so they're able to say Birchas Kohanim every day. We Ashkenazim, we're only happy a few times a year, usually when it involves basar and yayin, meat and wine, right? So then we could say Birchas Kohanim. At the end of Birchas Kohanim, we know the phrase, Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, that Hashem is going to turn his face towards us, V'yasim Lecha Shalom, a reinforcement of what we just said, that all of Birchas Kohanim is meaningless unless we have Shalom. But the Shemin HaTov, Bernard Weinberger, focuses on the first part of that pasuk. Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, that Hashem is going to turn towards you. So what does that mean, that Hashem is going to turn towards you? It says the Medrash, it almost appears as if Hashem is playing favorites, right? Like if I am teaching a class, and my child is in the class, and everyone's raising their hand, and I look at my child. Now, my children would hate that and bury themselves under the desk, but some children might say that you're showing favoritism, right? Everyone's raising their hand, and you're looking towards your child because you like them better than everybody else. Usually, by the way, it's the opposite. The teachers overcompensate and are actually harder on their own children, but anyways, right? So Hashem, Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, Hashem looks to us. Ask the Medrash, V'chi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nosei Panim L'Briya? In other words, does Hashem take bribes? It's almost like Hashem is like bribed towards us. Hashem is giving us favoritism. How could Hashem show favoritism? I'm going to read for you the Medrash, and then we're going to look at the source inside. El Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu K'Shem Shehem Nosim Li Panim, Kach Ani Nosim Lehem Panim, that just as the Jewish people show or turn towards me, so too I'll turn towards them. What does it mean? Where do we show Hashem, so to speak, favoritism? The Medrash says, Ketzav Kasafti, it says in benching, Ve'achalta V'savata V'rachta. When do we have to thank Hashem? When we eat, when we are satiated. In other words, after you've had your 14 hot dogs here at our Thursday night Parsha Shir, everyone can bench. Because Ve'achalta, you've all eaten, Visavata, if this doesn't fill you up, we got other issues. Ubirachta, and so then at the end, you bench. But says the Medrash, V'adam Yoshev Ubanim B'nei Bisov Ein Lefneim K'dei Sviya. But someone sits down for a meal in their house, they don't have a full meal. But nonetheless, V'nosim Lipanim. And yet we turn towards Hashem, and we make a bracha. Why? Because we paskin. That even though the pasuk says V'savata, that we don't have to bench until we are fully satiated, the halacha is ad kabaitz, ad kezais, ad kabeitza. That we, even the size of an olive or an egg, even that, even when we're not fully satiated, we nevertheless thank Hashem by reciting a full Berachas HaMazon. That is the Medrash. In other words, Hashem says he's not really showing us favoritism. Rather, it's as if Hashem is saying, yes, it's true that I show favoritism to the Jewish people, but in reality, it's not favoritism. That since we show favoritism towards Hashem, because we go above and beyond and thank him even for less than we absolutely have to. Again, v'savata, we only really have to thank Hashem when we have a big meal. But we thank Hashem even when we have even an olive size. So Hashem says, because they show favoritism to me, so they deserve special treatment from me to them. So it's not favoritism. That's the Medrash. It's quid pro quo. We go above and beyond for God, and so he goes above and beyond for us. Listen to what Rabbi Bernard Weinberg does with this Medrash. He says in the middle of page number 2, he says, V'nir li lahosif, my third underline for those who are following. Delashon ad kazayis ad kebetza. What does it mean that even though we only have to thank Hashem when we're fully satiated, we do it just a little bit? Balomar daf shekvar zachu l'kdei svia. Mikol makom heim zochrim adayim matzavam ad kazayis ve'ad kebetza. V'amuvan bazeh b'shnei ofanim dahaynu de'enam izgayim be'oshram k'nizkalel. V'o de'im modim al kol davar katan. What does it mean that we thank Hashem even for an olive size or an egg size? It means that even though, Baruch Hashem, we live in a land of plenty, and we sit here on Thursday nights and we have an abundance, we can refill those hot dogs until you guys are blue in the face. Right? Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. The cardiologists make a lot of money. Right? But Baruch Hashem. Okay? So, but yet, nonetheless, you know what we thank Hashem for, he says? Even for the little stuff. Dehemodim al kol davar katan. That's what it means. Ad kazayis ad kebetza. That even though we have so much, there's a visavata. Hashem, we have so much around us, but we're not going to lose sight of also thanking you for the little things, for the little things. Gam ki v'nishar etzlam hoda af al hadavar hakatan. V'zeu inyan shel tzadikim shechavim aleim mamonim edachne al pachim ketanim. This is what it means that tzadikim, that they were careful even over the small jugs. We know from Yaakov Avinu, Parshas Vayishlach. In other words, they never took even the small things for granted. Even the small things for granted. Why do I think this is such a powerful idea? This reminded me of a conversation we had earlier this year with, I think it was Eli Sharabi when he was here. I hope all of you were there. If not, you should watch it online. If not, you should read his book. In the book, Eli Sharabi talks about gratitude. That one of the things that he employed when he was in captivity was gratitude. And he felt that was critical to their survival, to their maintaining a positive outlook, which would enable them to survive the horrors of what they were facing. And if you remember in that conversation, he said, some of you might be thinking that even in the darkest moments of captivity, how could you have anything to be thankful for? They were sitting underground for however many days. How could you have anything to be grateful for? He said, I always forced everyone to find something. Do you remember his examples? His examples were maybe the guard who was most brutal to us, maybe for a few days he either wasn't there or he was a little nicer. Like that was the little bit that he found that he was thankful for. I think another example was like there was salt in their food or something, right? Even something so small, something that we take for granted, but he didn't lose sight of also needing to be grateful for every little thing. And for me, that was such a big Musar Haskel, such an important lesson. Because we live in a world with blessing all around us. And it's so easy for it to fall into the backdrop of our lives because it's so ubiquitous. But ad kebetza and ad kezayis, the fact that Hashem says, you want to know why I'm showing them favoritism? They deserve the special treatment because they even thank me for a little olive or for a little egg. What is Hashem really saying? Hashem is saying that we never forget to thank Hashem for the little things, even for the small bites of bread, even if we have a little snack. And I think that's what Eli Sharabi was talking about. And I think it's something that every single one of us needs to work harder on. Because we live in a world where blessing is ubiquitous, and again, it's so much around us, so we lose sight and we don't think and we don't appreciate and we overlook and we get frustrated too easily because we lack that gratitude. Sometimes you have to stop. And you have to notice the small things. I remember I once heard a shir from Rabbi Frand. It was one of his Shabbos Shuva drushes. He was talking about gratitude. He was talking about brachas. One or the other. Maybe both. And he spoke about a cup of coffee. And it was like a master class in how to not lose sight over the small things. Right? We get my coffee in the morning. I fought coffee for the first 41 years of my life. I don't like addiction to anything. I didn't want to be dependent. Those guys were like, oh, I have such a headache by 9 o'clock. I didn't want to be that guy. Anyways, 41, I started having coffee, and of course now I'm addicted, right? So now, it's not just the caffeine. And this is what Rabbi Fran spoke about. So when we make a brach of shahakol in the morning on our cup of coffee, You're not just making a bracha, Hashem, she'akol nieh b'dvaro. Right? Think about the cup of coffee in front of you. Right? Yeah. Look at the steam as it comes up. Think about the smell. Right? Use all of your senses, because that's really the experience of coffee, is not just the caffeine. It's an experiential part of your morning. Right? Like I could take a caffeine pill, but there's something about like that cup of coffee that I have that's so soothing and comforting and so much a part of the fabric of my day. So when I make a brach on the cup of coffee, I'm not just saying, Hashem, thank you for giving me caffeine. No, it's the smell, it's the look, it's the taste. And now, of course, I'm a huge coffee snob, right? Keurig machines. It's like water you get out of the tap in whatever. Like it's putrid. You know, it's got to be good coffee. Now it's got to be like an espresso or an espresso. And of course, like with that comes the fancier machines. And now, of course, I went from like nothing to spending like, you know, $3 a day on a cup of coffee because it's got to be coffee. But that's the point, right? I could very easily overlook the cup of coffee. Hashem, thank you for caffeine. She'akol nieh b'dvaro. Or I can say, Hashem, you're allowing me to use all of my senses to experience something magnificent every morning. Again, the sight and the smell and the experience and what it does for me. We could apply that to any area of our life, any area of your life. Even if you think about Morty Goldenberg, when he came in for the hot dog, like what was the first thing he said? The smell is so overwhelming, right? Smell is an amazing part of our senses that we oftentimes overlook. If you didn't have smell, if you ever get that bad cold, you know, where you're completely congested and then someone puts food in front of you and it's like fresh, you can't appreciate the food because you can't have smell. And if you can't smell, you can't fully appreciate the food, right? Think about it. When you're eating these hot dogs, Hashem is giving you the ability. It's like a full body experience. I think that's what he's talking about here. And again, I could apply it to billions of areas of our life. Ad kebesa ad kezayis means that even though visavata, even though we're only obligated to thank Hashem for the big stuff, Hashem says, but you went above and beyond. You thank me for the little stuff. And because you thank me for the little stuff, you deserve a little bit more. Now coming back to our pasuk in the Parsha. Again, we finish up Birchas Kohanim Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, which the Medrash interpreted as, how can Hashem show favoritism to us? Isn't he a just God? Hashem says, I'm not showing favoritism at all. Really, because the Jewish people go above and beyond, because I'm so appreciative that they notice even the small things that I do for them, so they deserve my extra love and care. Think about it in a relationship. Think about it in a relationship. If you only notice the big stuff, you are sleeping on the couch that night. Right? If you only notice the big stuff, you're sleeping on the couch. Right? When does your spouse or a friend really appreciate you? It's when you notice the small stuff. Oh, I notice it's a new shirt. Oh, I notice you got a new shaitel. Oh, I notice a new perfume. Oh, I notice you got... Oh, you notice that about me? You notice those small details? That shows that you really care about me. Hashem is the same way. And so ad kebeitza, ad kezayis means we can't just like thank Hashem and the Yom Narayim and Shavuos and then... No, like every little thing, to be able to stop and to be present, to be mindful of the great gifts that Hashem has given us. That is idea number two. Okay, idea number three comes from Rapam in his Atara Lamelech. Also in Birchas Kohanim. This one, I loved the... It's a little bit more Torah, but I love it. So you got to bear with me. The Gemara in Sota says the following. Let's talk it outside, and then we'll go inside. Do you ever wonder how chutzpah dik the Kohanim? Anyone a Kohen here? My dear neighbor. Do you know how chutzpahdik you are? I'll tell you why. Do you know why you're chutzpahdik? I'll tell you why you're chutzpahdik. Because when you went up to dear Birchas Kohanim, do you know who you turned your back to? You turned your back to Hashem. Right, think about it. When the Kohanim get up there, right? So they first start off that way. And then at one point, they turn around to face us, little people, to give us the bracha. But when they turn to give us the bracha, who are they turning their back towards? They're turning their backs to Hashem. And so therefore, what a chutzpah. Ah, but the Gemara in Sota comes along. Amar of Yitzchak, la'olam te emas tzibor alecha, that you should always fear the tzibor, the congregation. Sherei kohanim pneim kalpe am ve'achareim kalpe shechina, that we must be more important than Hashem because the kohanim turn their back to Hashem to face us. You ever think about it? It's a gevalda kasha, right? So it must be, says Rav Yitzchak in the Gemara, that we, the congregation, in a weird way, are more important than Hashem. What does that mean? So Rapam quotes the Torah Tamima. And the Torah Tamima asks the question on this Gemara, based on a tshuva of the Rambam. The Rambam was asked the following question, which was that the Anche Alexandria, the Jews in Alexandria, in Egypt, the minhag was that the Kohanim would turn to face the people, and they would turn their backs to the Aron Kodesh when it was open. And they asked the question, should we be turned? And they would close the Aron, because it was disgraceful if the Aron was open for them to turn their back on it. So the Rambam answers that, again, a halachic answer, that if the Torah was 10 tvachim, whatever. Forget the minutia of the halacha. Ask the Torah to me, but why didn't the Rambam answer our Gemara? Which is that if you were able to turn your back on the Shekhinah, then of course you can turn your back on a Torah. Like, why wasn't that the obvious answer? Listen to what Rapam answers. Rapam says they're two totally different sugyas altogether. That the Rambam was addressing whether you're allowed to turn your back on the Sefer Torah, it's a halachic decision. When it comes to the Gemara and Sota, however, the assumption in the Gemara of Sota is something that is fantastic, right? We're talking about the Kavod HaShekhinah. We're talking about whether Mr. Rothman was able to turn his back, not just on the Sefer Torah, because the Aron was closed at the time, but whether he was able to turn his back on Hashem, on the Shekhinah. And therefore, he says, Ve'al zeh ka'amar, this is the punchline, Shemikol makom kado gavod hatzibur adiv, that even though you're turning your back on the Shekhinah, the honor of the community is more important than the Shekhinah. Why? How does that work? Isn't that a chutzpah? He says, no. Ve'afsher she'atam hu, b'mnei shekol be'asara Shekhinah sharia. That any time that there are 10 Jews present, the Shekhinah is present. Lefichach, and therefore, kavod hatzibur hu gam kein kavod hashekhinah. In other words, when we gather together to learn, when we gather together for a minyan, we actually house the Shekhinah. We create an environment for Hashem's divine presence to come. And so yes, v'adif min kavod ha'echal. In other words, it's not a stira, it's not a contradiction. We thought at the beginning, what's the problem with the Kohanim? They're turning their back on Hashem to face us lowly people. Comes along Rapam and says, no, you're not lowly people. Because when 10 of you come together to daven, you are a place where the Shekhinah dwells. And so it's not that you're turning your back on the Shekhinah to face lowly people who are imperfect and sinful. No, it's the opposite. You're turning your back on one form of a Shekhinah to face another form of a Shekhinah. Now, why do I love that? Why do I love that? Because it highlights for us what it means to be part of the Jewish people. When you come to Minyan, when you come to a Shir, when 10 Jews gather together, right? It's not just 10 individuals gathering together. Oh, and now you've checked off a halachic category that allows you to do something. No, that when we gather together, we are no different than the Shekhinah itself. We are a house. We are a base that allows the Shekhinah to come. It shows and it reminds us the power of what it means to be part of the Jewish people, of what it means to daven with a minyan, of what it means to come together as a chabura, to be able to learn on Thursday nights. It's not just 10 people coming together, and again, and now we've like checked off our halachic category. No, it's something so much more elevated. Again, listen to his words. Shekobe asar shechinta sharia. Anytime 10 people come together, Shekhinah. And therefore, kavod hatzibur hu gam kein kavod hashekhinah. It's not a contradiction. It's not that my neighbor, Mr. Rothman, turned his back on the Shekhinah to be able to face people. No. He turned his back on one form of Shekhinah to give honor to another form of Shekhinah, which arguably is even higher. Is even higher. And that's the Chiddush of Rapam. So we started off with an amazing question, which is how could Kohanim be so chutzpidik to turn their back on the Shekhinah, on God, and face us? And the answer is, he's not turning his back on God. He's actually showing the ultimate respect to Hashem. Because the ultimate respect for Hashem is when 10 people come together and we form a place for the Shekhinah to dwell. Hashem says, that's where I am. So you're not turning your back on me. You're just looking at me from a different perspective. And it should reinforce for us just how powerful it is to be part of a Jewish people, to be part of a Jewish community, and how that elevates each one of us. That it's not 1 + 1 = 2, but it's that the whole is greater than the sum of the individual parts. And that's what it means part of Jewish people. So we saw 3 ideas in 30 minutes. One was the wild tshuva of Rav Adi Yosef and the even more unbelievable answer that he gave about the importance of Shalom Bein Ish L'Ishto, that if Hashem, in the context of the Sota, was willing to allow his name to be erased for Shalom Bias, All of us need to give thought for how we're going to work on Shalom Bayis, how we're going to work on creating peace. What are we going to do differently this week that's going to reinforce peace in our homes? Number two was the idea from Bernhard Weinberg of what it means to be bribe Hashem. That how are we showing favoritism to Hashem? He's showing favoritism to us. What does that mean? So he says here that what it means is that we're not showing, Hashem's not showing us favoritism. Hashem's saying, because you're going above and beyond, you're doing more than I would have asked of you by expressing gratitude for even the little things, therefore you deserve special treatment back for you. Again, think of it in a relationship. If you notice that small detail about your spouse, so they're going to love you more. Why are they going to love you more? It's not that there's like a favoritism. It's no, you deserve it. You deserve it. It's in gratitude toward you. And idea number three is Rapam, which is a reminder of just how powerful it means to be part of a Jewish people, that it's not that we're just 10 individuals, but that we create a conduit to allow the Shekhinah, to allow Hashem's presence to rest amongst us, and therefore we should never underestimate what it means to be part of a Jewish people. And with that, I wish everyone good Shabbos.